Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. This is Carver Watson with Let's Talk.
We acknowledge the continuing sovereignty of all First Nations across the country where this program is broadcast. We acknowledge elders of the First People of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. We also welcome our listeners tuned in across the National Indigenous Radio Service, as well as wherever you may be around the world if you are streaming via the web. Welcome to Let's Talk, and we have two regular guests on the Let's Talk program, the aunties, Auntie Mary Graham and Auntie Lilla Watson. Auntie Mary, who's your mob? Where's your country?
Look over. Good morning, and happy New Year 2017. Oh,
thank you.
My mob is on my father's side, the Combermere mob from the Gold Coast, part of a big Yugambeh language group from down there. On my mother's side, she was from Gander, a Waka Waka, from the Burnett River District. Yeah. So I have relatives all around the Southeast Queensland on from both sides.
Yeah, deadly. Auntie Lilla?
Good morning. This is the first session we've had without Tiger. And it is something that I'd just like a few moments to remember Tig, because he was the only one that ever interviewed us, and he always talked with the aunties.
Yeah.
So I'd just like to acknowledge Tig and what he developed between Mary and I, and it was a special relationship. I just want to acknowledge that and let people know.
This show in particular is so synonymous, you know, with him. And, you know, something that we actually had to talk about and think about, whether or not the program should continue, you know, because it is so synonymous with him and his voice.
Yes.
And in some ways, you know, I could sit here, or any host could sit here and say all the exact same words that he would have, with the same questions and same everything, but, you know, it wouldn't sound right because it's not him.
But at the same time, I really think that he would want it to continue.
Yeah.
It was something that he was so pleased that it educated so many listeners and had a reaching out effect, and such an educational stimulus for so many people. And I know he would want it to continue because he was so pleased with how many people would ring up and say, I learned so much from the talkback sessions, and I know he would want it to go on. I just finding it a little bit difficult.
That's understandable.
First time back in the studio without him.
Good memories.
But I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners, and also say that I'm a Kungaloo, very Gubba woman. I was fortunate enough to grow up on my grandmother's mother's country in central Queensland, and I'm Kungaloo country. And I've spent a great deal of time in Brisbane now, so I have a historical association with the Brisbane area. I love our Brisbane too.
We're the same mob. We might be connected. Well, thank yous both for coming in and coming to sit down and have a yarn. And Aunt, your acknowledgement of Tiger. Yes, it's important. And it's important in all we do, I think, that we always acknowledge those that have come before us, you know. And I have to work that into our acknowledgement at the start of the show too. But no, thank yous for coming in, and I'm not sure how up to date on current affairs or news yous are. I remember my old man, he used to get a bit impatient with the news, and whether it be it didn't matter what news, it'd be Channel 2 or Channel 9 or whatever, he'd be mumbling and getting upset. But we've just come, you know, the end of January now, so we've just, you know, come past the Invasion Day demonstrations and rallies and that sort of stuff. And, you know, it's been reported out there that, you know, 50,000 people turned out in Melbourne to demonstrate and to show support for our mob, talking about, you know, the recognition of Invasion Day as opposed to a day for celebration.
Yes.
And this is a conversation, I guess, that's been going on a long time. Could you offer some sort of thoughts about, you know, the history of this conversation and its relevance today as well?
Yes.
Well, it's a continuous thing, isn't it? It's been going on for, like, decades. Decades and decades, like 100 years or something, but in different forms, to different degrees of intensity too, you know. Way back in New South Wales, I think it was, the protests, say, in the 1930s or something like that, 40s, 20s or that.
Well, the Day of Mourning.
Day of Mourning, yeah. Victoria.
Was that that old man?
In Victoria.
William Cooper?
Yeah.
It was him, eh? Yes. Yeah. So it's been going on for a long time, and it hasn't. It's unrelenting, which is wonderful, really, because you know, with colonialism everywhere happening all over the world, we're like Indigenous people everywhere, wherever colonialism touched, whichever continent, we are people with a grievance, and that grievance hasn't been addressed yet. So every time that the colonising countries powers want to celebrate their sort of introduction, usually violent introduction into the country and against the people, they are confronted, they feel confronted, but they are actually confronted by the grievances of the Indigenous people. So we are no different, and we will continue that no matter what happens or doesn't change or changes and so on. It will never be forgotten, because we lost, in a sense, a whole country. That, or put it another way, they got a whole country for nothing, actually. You know, a whole people from other side of the world came here and took our country away from us. So that's for terrible, not just grievance, but ongoing sort of sadness,
trauma.
And trauma, and it doesn't seem to end. It does is it changes its nature. That's all.
And that's what I was going to say. There wasn't a country for nothing. There was a price paid.
Oh, huge price! I mean it. Of course, you know, straightforward payment sort of system. You know, sovereign debt. That's what they owe us. For destroying us and the country itself.
It's unbelievable, really, when you look at the situation of Aboriginal people. You know, some people living in dire straits and poverty, unbelievable, in their own country.
In a rich country.
And all
like
around
this.
Us, there's this wealth made from this land by people who came from somewhere else. And there is a consciousness, I suppose, hopefully starting to develop, that people are seeing the injustices and are beginning to realise the injustices and wanting to do something about it, which is really good. I think that's why the Change the Date movement is sort of growing a lot more, because people are developing that sort of consciousness.
On that point, there is a broader, you know, it's not just Murrays that are taking up this there's a lot of non-Indigenous people who are supportive and understand.
And want to see these changes.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. But
that's good.
We were talking about that yesterday briefly with Bo. That's always sort of been the way. We've always had mob, you know, since the 60s and 70s, who've come and worked with us.
Absolutely.
And supported our mob in our struggle and in our search for justice and
some very very good people. And one of the things I think of in regards to the white Australian population is that they could learn, I think, a lot more from some of their elders, which they don't. Mm. Always.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, it's a Western society, it's a youth orientated society, and they don't have much time to listen to their elders. And Eva Bacon, I think, is a wonderful elder, white Australian, who I think people could learn a lot from. And I think it's by listening to elders like her that helps younger people develop their consciousness in regards to the injustices that have occurred in this country. And the problem is, of course, that white people can only operate on white terms of reference. They have a difficulty to seeing the other side. And they want to say that colonialism is something that happened in the past and you need to forget about it and become Australians like the rest of us, which is the assimilationist policy that has always been foisted on Aboriginal people for a long time by successive governments in this country.
The move on mentality, isn't it?
Yes. And this is from a people who locate the bulk of their race history in overseas countries. Telling the oldest living culture in the world, we, you know, settled this country over 60,000 years ago. And they want to say to us, oh, forget about that and, you know.
Move on.
Move on.
Join this white Australian society that has been invented by colonialism. And it's a society that's been developed along European lines. And created this fallacy that they're a European country. When you only have to look at the map of the world to see where we're situated, we're not a European country.
Absolutely not.
And
the neighbours.
And it's that sort of myth-making that is a continuing process in this country. And that's one of the most powerful weapons of colonialism is myth-making. And one of the greatest myths that white Australians have invented for themselves is that colonialism hasn't affected them, it's only affected Aboriginal people. When really, I think the biggest effect has been on white Australians, and they have difficulty in seeing it, understanding it, and owning it. It's always a denial of our history.
So one of the comments that was made when somebody was asked about recognising Invasion Day or changing the date, they said they shouldn't give in to guilt politics. And I thought, what a sad way to dehumanise and reduce the legitimate sort of basis for people saying that no, the history isn't accurate.
It's blind, isn't it? It's a kind of blindness, willful blindness, about their role in life. And I think it's sort of funny too, at the same time, or strange in a way, that all the contradictions that are inherent in colonialism and imperialism are coming home to roost now across the world.
Yes.
You know, what do they
Donald
say?
Trump.
The chickens. Well, not just Donald Trump, but the whole thing of all those Middle East wars, and then millions and millions of refugees hitting the European shores, you know, and they don't know what to do about it. But they are the chickens, millions
coming
of chickens
home
coming
through.
Home to roost. And it comes out of the whole global imperialism, which colonialism is just a part of, colonialism's in different countries. Do you know what I mean? And those things, they don't know how to actually see it because they're so willfully blind as to what the colonial mentality is, because they only want to look, they look ahead, but they don't look behind, and they don't look at what the situation is here. It's like blinkers on, do you know what I mean? And they like those blinkers. They like those blinkers because it makes them feel bad when they take the blinkers off, if ever they're game enough to. But there are white fellows who are game enough to. There are, you know, around the supporters, as you were talking about before. But yeah, it's crazy. It's to ignore the
talking about those contributions. We often hear, you know, when different people are talking in different forums, they quite often use a quote. I don't know if it's the same, Lilla Watson, about if you've come to help me, you're wasting your time. But if you've come because your liberty is bound with mine, then let us work together.
Yes.
And so there's an appropriate way to engage, though, too. You know, when we are talking about, you know, Murray business and Murray issues, you know, it's important that, you know, we don't have people just, I don't like to use the word bleeding heart, but people who don't have the same intentions, you know, and contribute in a way that fits with our model. Where do you see our discussion going from a Murray perspective? Where do you see our discussion going around this Invasion Day and whether we change the date or what?
Well, I reckon you just put your finger on one word there, a model, because I think the wonderful thing I like, a thing I like about that wonderful saying of yours, Luke, is that at the heart of it, at the core of it, is the law of relationships, which is something that Aboriginal people in this country, we can't talk for other Indigenous people, but I'm sure they have some form of it themselves. But I think because of our great age and that we worked out this relationship with land, we worked out what that fully means, the law of relationships, how we're supposed to conduct ourselves with each other, with our neighbours, with strangers coming by, with people who need help, and so on and so on. Not saying that we're good and perfect, or, you know, moral, highly moral, and all this sort of stuff all the time, but that we established a positive, stable society according to this law of relationships, which is the, you know, the law, the land is the source of the law kind of thing. That's exactly what that saying is. As I understand it, it's based on that core thing of how we're supposed to treat one another. And unfortunately, a very aggressive mob model, if you like, came to this country, which hasn't got any kind of idea of the law of relationships, what should be the law of relationships between each other and between their people and their environments and so on and so on. And so I think that model is open to, and we are all the time, not just us, but other blackfellas are making it
open
to a whole lot of people who aren't Aboriginal, you know, people, newcomers to the country, old Australians and so on, to learn what that actually means and how do you have a good, stable, ordered society for future, so that they can see openly and honestly the mistakes that imperialism and colonialism have made and what it's done to people's societies, how they can treat them, their own mob, the poor, you know, women, bad relationships between men and women and so on. How did that all come about? It came about through the kind of political, social, philosophical model that they've been strongly pushing for centuries, basically.
So it doesn't work. You only have to look from the countries they came from. It doesn't work. And here they have an opportunity where they can build on something very different that has worked for thousands and thousands of years. But can I say briefly about that saying? I mean, I don't believe in the ownership ideas, and I don't believe it's just my idea. Honestly, it's everybody's ideas. And it's everybody lives it and sees it and creates it. And it's not my saying, it's everybody's saying. It's come out of all the expressions of the voices of people, you know, not just me. It's It's just somehow had my name attached to it, which I don't think is a good idea, but anyway.
How's it gotten about so much? Where was it said or what?
This nun in Victoria rang me up and said, "You've written this in a paper, can I use it?" And I couldn't even remember the paper, and I said, "No, I don't think it's my paper." She said, "Oh, yes, it's your paper." And I said, "Oh, well, use it, but don't put my name on it, just put anonymous or something." I don't want to own it. I don't even remember it.
And it started from there.
Yes, and it's terrible. It shouldn't have my name on it.
Wonderful. Oh, no, no.
But anyway.
That's true.
It is all those things Mary's saying, that relationality that is so important. And because it's a cultural thing that is part of our culture, we grow in, we live it, and, you know, all the time, then it's very foreign to white fellows because they are limited by the individualism they've developed in Western society.
They're imprisoned by it almost. You know?
And that individualism limits them to their own lifetime. They want to see change. And they want to see change in their own lifetime. But as Aboriginal people, we're very much a group-based society, and we see change not in the immediate future, but in the thousands of years that are we're planning ahead of us, because that's what we've done for thousands of years. We just contribute a small brick towards the future of our coming generations. And we've been able to do that through that wonderful ethic that Aboriginal people developed and built in this country, and that's custodianship of land. Land is the most important and sacred thing in all our lives, and it must have first priority that we look after it, we care for it. And that's how, of course, as you know, Mary says, it's about relationships. It's how we should, as human beings, treat each other.
It's where we learn ethics, eh?
Absolutely. You know,
the nature of ethics becomes clearer when we're looking after something greater and bigger than ourselves, you know.
Absolutely.
And that model comes from country. Caring for country, country caring for us, and that thing of reciprocity.
Reciprocity,
of taking care of each other, and
that's the law. That is that's what the law. Aboriginal law is about. Capital L A W. Reciprocity.
We're going to take a quick break. Our guests today, Auntie Mary Graham and Auntie Lilla Watson, joining us on Let's Talk. When we come back, we might talk a bit about something else in the news, Chok Mundine, upcoming fight, and some of his controversial views. Yeah, we'll discuss when we come back.
Since do can't seem to make the grade. Either I get drunk or locked in jail. I wonder what it is that turns my motor on. I always seem like this time to just fail. Surely there must be another side to what I see. Makes me live like this without a clue. Ah, how come I'm so hopeless when it comes to preservation? I wish a magic wand would wave me through. And do you think that there's a chance that I might find redemption? Think that there's a chance that I won't stray? I've got to find the path that leads to my salvation. Don't want the Ganji is taking me away. Don't want the Ganji is taking me away. Don't want the Ganji is taking me away. When I look at our people and the way they stood real proud, can't say today we follow in that style. We're a stolen generation with a white man's point of view. I think I'll have to reconcile a while. Yeah, looking in the mirror, I feel as if I'm no good. Just waiting for the sun to rise and break. I don't know what I'm waiting for. Maybe I disguise another drink, another big mistake. So do you think that there's a chance that I might find redemption? You think that there's a chance that I won't stray? I've got to find the path that leads to my salvation. Don't want the Ganji taking me away. Don't want the Ganji taking me away. Don't want the boogeyman taking me away. Dying and too many people sad, too many people hoping for a change. Oh, I have to make it happen and get it off the ground. Don't want to always be the one that's strange. And I don't want my little kids there standing at my side saying land rights when they put me in the ground. I think I'll have to rethink my present attitude, 'cause I am the land and always been around. Do you think that there's a chance that I might find redemption? Think that there's a chance that I won't stray? I've got to find the path that leads to my salvation. Don't want the Ganji taking me away. Don't want the Ganji taking me away.
February is Love Month, when we remind ourselves it's okay to talk about sex and sexual health. That includes checkups for infections, contraception advice, and any concerns in your sexual relationships. If you have a question or a concern, don't be afraid to make an appointment with your doctor. It's important to be informed and to get accurate information. You can be open and honest with your doctor. They're not going to laugh or shame you. They're there to help you and make sure you are the healthiest you. It's important to stay on top of your sexual health. Infections like chlamydia are common, but also easy to test for and treatable. Many people have no symptoms at all and don't even know they have an infection. If you are or have been sexually active, you should make sure you get regular checkups as part of your regular 715 health check, or more often if you've had a change of partner or have any other risk. And don't wait. If you have any symptoms, or even if you just feel something is not quite right, call your local Aboriginal Medical Service and make an appointment.
A message from the Institute for Urban Indigenous Health.
You're tuned to Let's Talk. a weekly current affair program hosted by First Nations people for First Nations peoples. This is Carver Watson with Let's Talk.
Welcome back to Let's Talk. Our guests today, Aunty Mary Graham and Aunty Lilla Watson. We were talking a bit about, the Invasion Day rallies and protests that have happened over the last week, and also some of the that sort of background and the factors that contribute to that conversation. And there's a similar conversation going on and carrying on now out of this with Chok Mundine saying that he's not willing to stand up for the national anthem. Mm. I think it speaks into the same sort of topic that we're speaking about. There's this very differing view of what it means to be Australian for our communities and our people.
That's
and
right.
Mainstream people and the broader population. Mm. Well, what are your thoughts about, Chok's statements and sentiment as well as, what that means? Yeah.
Well, what can you say apart from this? You totally agree
yeah.
with it.
Yes.
And not to take anything away from that he says that because he's so... Well, no, he's famous and so on. And a lot of young people are listening to him. But also that I think a lot of non-Aboriginal people wouldn't stand up either, actually, from what I've been told. They don't really bother about standing up for anthems or anything like that. So maybe there's this idea of, that kind of colonial-style patriotism, which is a shallow kind of thing anyway. What's that old sayings like my country right or wrong or something? Usually an excuse to go and make war on somebody else. It needs to be done away with anyway. Maybe it could be something else like a more modern song or whatever, but not an anthem, not necessarily an anthem. Mm.
There's that Aboriginal song by the what's those women's names? Victorian group Titters.
Yes, that's right. Yes,
and anthem. they sing anthem. Is it anthem?
Mm.
Mm. You don't know. I can't remember the words.
That's exactly the lines. It says, "Don't sing me your anthem if you don't
that's
know
right.
the words."
Oh, yeah. Right.
They sing.
Okay, yes,
yeah, and is exactly right.
Mm.
Because really, white Australians. Mm. And newcomers to the country, the new migrants, just learn the song automatically without even thinking what those words mean.
Mm-hmm.
And the line, I look at, Indigenous Africans, I see Indian people from India, I see Asian people standing there and singing this song, Advance Australia Fair. Do they know what that actually means? And it comes from that white Australia policy that Australia had in place for so long, right up into was it 70, 80s or something?
Oh, very recent.
Yeah.
It was a before
and it
or
was
after
about fair skinned people only to be allowed in this country. And I look at these, these people singing this song and I think it's quite ironic,
Yeah, and it's wrong on the other account if they want to try and use that excuse either. If they say fair meaning an equal treatment or nice
kind. They don't even know.
They don't mean that either. I mean, it's wrong on both counts, isn't it?
Yeah.
Totally wrong.
It came about due to that white Australia policy, I believe.
Mm. Yeah.
But then if they want to say it's a fair go.
Yeah, say fair go, that's what I mean. Yeah.
That doesn't even...
Doesn't even count.
That doesn't even count doesn't, either.
No, it doesn't computers.
Fair go for who?
Fair go for who? Only fair people. Fair goes for fair people, right?
Well, is that what it means, Advance Australia Fair?
Yeah, I think it does.
That's what I understood it to mean.
Hey,
yeah,
look out.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
worldwide
explosive. And here these... I've
heard it here first.
People, what should we be singing?
Yes.
Advance Australia Black.
Piebald or something.
Yeah. Well, they had different
days. Days.
I can't help. I've got to tell you this, little Jay.
Yeah.
I was visiting this.
Should we go to a break? Or
I've got to tell you this little joke, true. I was visiting this friend of mine, and another person came with his little son, and she had this black and white cat. When you said piebald, it came to me straight away. She had this black and white cat, and he's saying, "Daddy, Daddy, look at that cat. It's got black patches on it." He said, and he's saying to his father, "Oh, why did that happen?" And he said, and his father's talking, he said, "Oh, I don't know." He said, "Dad, Dad, why did the cat turn out like that?" And he looked at me and said, "Oh, maybe it had a black father and a white mother." And I said, "Oh, I'm glad I didn't turn out like that." not that I had a white father, my parents were Aboriginal, but I thought, I couldn't help saying, "Oh, I'm glad I didn't turn out."
All blotches all over.
Yeah. Brindle.
Brindle, that's right.
Pieball.
I mean, I sorry to keep on going on the thing with the song and that, but it would be nice if it was a proper song. I mean, I think
that'd be wonderful.
Yeah, I think of the songs sometimes of, it's traditional kind of songs, like when there's a group that I don't hear much of, or I don't know if they're still around, but something called Bara from West Australia, Barra, and it means west wind, and they sing a song in language about the west wind.
Mm.
So I think every different groups, all groups everywhere had songs about the land, you know, their particular land. Some feature of it, the mountain, or the water or the river or the birds or the plants or something like that. And I thought anything like that is lovely, you know.
Wouldn't it be wonderful?
You know, you're singing about the country, you're singing up country.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, singing up the country.
Original tradition.
But they want to sing about individuals ideal
patriotism.
That
it actually came as I understand it, from the beginning of nation states, and they were at war all the time. So they had to have a marching song going
like
into
a war cry sort of thing.
Almost like war cries, but a whole song.
Like
see?
A sports day.
They do it in sports, as you know.
Exactly like that. Yeah, military martial law, martial song, you know, as in military. But, that'll have to go along with colonialism and imperialism. Imperialism and both those things are on their last legs, you can honestly say.
Young Chuck Mundine, I think, it takes a lot of courage.
That's right.
To
oh, my
say
word.
But he's always
been like that, too, you know. Yeah.
And
not afraid to go out, go against the grain.
And say what he thinks and what he feels.
That's right.
And it does take a lot of courage, and, you know, I really commend him for that.
Yeah. Right.
And people
want to condemn him instead of saying, what's he actually saying? You know, what is behind what he's saying? Why is he saying that? Instead of, you know, taking it on and thinking about, you know, he's doing it for a reason, and what's the reason?
That's right. And the reason is fairly clear. I mean, he says it straight out, eh?
Yeah.
You know, what is it? It's nothing complicated about it, really.
It is racist. It is racist.
But even if people do disagree, you know, people don't have to be disrespectful about it. You know, and that comes back to what we were talking about earlier,
that's the importance
of maintaining relationships. Now, there's a lot of times where people will disagree, but that's all right. I think, you know, people should still respect somebody's, you're saying, I mean, it takes a lot of courage to go to talk up and sort of be a lone voice when you're sort of stepping out on your own a bit for something you believe in.
And even
if you do disagree, you know, there should be some form of, I think, you know, some form of respect, you know, for him to have a view.
And there's so, you know, the, what do you call these news people? They're so dismissive and
media,
denigrating media. Of his, what he says.
Yes,
right. And, and, you know, a lot of white Australians, you know, like to go and throw mud at him or... And no, you're quite right. I think, you know, people's opinions should be treated with respect, even if you don't agree with them.
I think every now and then there needs to be that kind of jolting, you know. I mean, the ones that we can think of in history, like old, he died, Muhammad Ali. You know, when he said some similar kind of things.
He was a very courageous man, too.
Very courageous.
And he copped adamant. You know, he's quite revered and respected now, but at the time, he was quite.
And threatened. Oh, look, they did terrible things to him, you know. They stopped him. They deregistered him as a fighter, which was his living. And they wanted to... did he go to prison for not going to the Vietnam War?
They locked him up, and that's why he missed 3 years of the prime of his boxing career, and he was the heavyweight champion at the time, and they took him right at his peak. He said, sorry, mate.
And, you know, he stuck... I always remember him saying... You know, no Vietnamese ever called me nigger.
No Viet Cong ever called me a nigger. No, I bet that registered with a whole...
I'll have to tag that. Well, I forgot to tag this one. I forgot to tag something yesterday for editing.
Oh, you can't tag. That's a quote.
That's a famous quote.
That's a quote from Muhammad Ali.
This is your quote.
No, but he did. Oh, he stood up. Wonderful. And, I mean, again, we're talking, it's the same topic. We're talking about two different histories, you know. There's an expectation and this almost social expectation or convention that in order to be an Australian or American that you need to fit into the typical sort of the typical
Western
definitions.
Thinking.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, and who made them, boss?
Yeah,
who made them, boss?
They just did that.
Their guns and their ships.
Just through brutality and...
Yeah, that's what did it, really.
Absolutely. Mm.
But this understanding and this knowledge amongst not only our people, but, you know, different, you know, African-Americans have their own version. Native Americans are going to have their own version. Our values and our culture perseveres and it survives and it continues to be... taught and practiced, from, we're talking just before, William Cooper, the Invasion Day argument goes back to the early 30s, the first ever one.
But, I mean, when you get a culture as old as Aboriginal culture in this country, at least 60,000 years, and not only that, I mean, we had settled all over this country, 10,000 to 20,000 years before people started coming out of their caves in Africa,
in Europe,
and started spreading over Europe. I mean, you just think about that. I mean, wow, that's mind blowing.
And it's something to be embraced. You know, when we're talking about this sort of conflict, if you will, or this, this sort of contentious issue that is. These histories, there doesn't seem to be any sort of, well, that's not true. We're just talking about people taking on and supporting our mob.
Yes, there's good people out there.
Yeah, but in terms of formulating a national identity, if you will, we should be like we are with individuals, ready to sit down and respect and acknowledge.
Well, the fundamental nature of being human, I reckon they worked that out here a long time ago. And why the importance of that relationships between each other.
But being good at rugby league.
Absolutely. Well, enormous skills, just skills. I mean, that's one of the key things is actually being human is a skill, actually. It's not a scientific, biological kind of behavioural kind of thing. That's what they want to say. We are our brains, you know.
But
it's actually a learned skill to be human.
Yes.
And that's what the genius of Aboriginal people, I reckon. You know,
they understood that
and they founded it upon this relationship with land, with our environment. The relationship with the environment is a key thing to it because that's the template for, you know, what kind of humans we are then. Do we want to build a jungle where the strongest takes all the wealth and the power or not? Or do we want to have a stable, effective, efficient society where everybody belongs, even despite small conflicts, but not the kind of conflict where somebody takes over someone else's property or land area, you know. That seems to be what has been worked out here, and that's a genius thing, that, you know. And that's why a lot of different people now, thinkers and public philosophers, they are very curious about that. How did that work, you know? How did we actually do that?
It's very absolutely different from wonderful.
Well, you've both played... Mm. roles in creating that awareness too through your time at UQ, and you continue to raise awareness through your work for the...
Yes. Mary is an associate professor.
Oh, yeah, you are in the
Department of Political Science. She gives wonderful lectures there. Now, you're lecturing also in the philosophy department.
Going to start to. And we both lecture in the psychology department.
Yes.
Because Aboriginal people, you know, we're so used to, we never, as you say, little, you know, we never had to explain ourselves to anybody before. We just were or are, you know, be, didn't have to describe ourselves. But especially things like psychology, we
absolutely
enormous
what it means
of
to be human.
There, but we take it for granted.
Because we live it.
We're living
and
it.
And we've never ever had to explain ourselves before in our whole history because we live our culture.
Yes.
And especially that wonderful understanding of what it means to be human.
Mm.
And, you know, I see people think that you're just going to learn how to be human innately or something.
Innately, yeah, and it isn't.
And it's not. It's
not
a skill, like Mary says.
Mm,
and you only have to read about, you know, like feral children that have grown up with wolves or wild dogs.
Or
and they're rescued after, although I don't know if it's rescuing them really, because they can never...
Yeah, they have never bonded with
They've never able to bond with human beings.
Mm.
They've only bonded with the animals they grow up with.
Mm.
And yet lots of people want to say, oh, you know, being humans, like, you know, you just naturally grow up into being human.
Mm. It's not
You're
so
taught how to be human by other humans around you.
Mm.
And
it's a wonderful time.
And that's what Aboriginal people really developed, that great understanding of what it means to be human. Wonderful, great psychology of it. Developed in this country.
If they learnt nothing else, you know, powerful countries, not trying to just say only white fellows or whatever, but big, powerful, dominating countries, if only they ever tried to learn this thing of, if you're going to go out and if you want security, don't go out and invade and bomb other people's countries to try and secure your safety, your own security. You know, because when they do that, people tend to get pissed off. You know, you're invading other people's countries. They don't like it. Sooner or later, something will come back. You know, sooner or later, there'll be, as they say, a payback or what do they call it? Something back?
Karma.
Or karma, too. Mm. Yeah, karma. But blowback. That's the modern term now, blowback. There will be blowback. And sooner or later it'll hit them.
This is the
blowback. You can't do that anymore. You just simply can't do it.
Well, I think of it in even their terms of reference, if you will. You know, that whole thing of colonialism was an amassing of power, you know, and at those times land and states were power.
Yes.
And, you know, that's now translated to wealth in minerals and all sorts of things. But those focal points of where that wealth was concentrated and now, you know, still continue to be amongst the most, the largest economies.
Yes.
And so there are people now, because it's so widespread and we do live in a sort of, you know, in a market society, most of the world operates within the market. All these poor people from these poorer countries are looking to go to these power sources, if you will, or these larger economies where they can sort of, you know, earn a living and make a life for themselves, because their countries have been so taken advantage of.
Yeah, but by more powerful countries, they've ripped all the wealth out of it.
But also they've left where the in a whole lot of other countries that had been colonised, they've left their own... replicas of themselves, economic and political. So in those countries, there is a very wealthy elite too, you know. So the funny thing is, well, it's not funny, it's awful, that those old colonial powers, they can't any longer rip those countries off. They're still ripping them off, but with the help of those economic elites in those countries.
Mm.
And now those countries, those old colonial powers, they have to turn back to what they used to do before and rob their own people. And that's how the 1% actually gets more and more solid, more and more stronger
powerful.
In themselves, powerful, because the whole, all the institutions of their societies, the media, the law, you know, the army, and so on, all are there to protect that elite, That's all. Mm. They don't do anything else. They don't do anything about protecting the poorer. And that group of poor in their own countries is getting bigger and bigger. That's this austerity and so on, which this crazy government here thinks is a good idea too, because they're looking after their own elites here with the help of this mainstream media, which is, thank God for our own media. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Our own media tells us the truth. Do you know what I mean? Our own, thank God. So that's going to go on and on. And people are increasingly fed up. That's why it's getting very, very touchy, and they're getting very worried, the elites themselves. But they can't help themselves for being so greedy, you know. And the proof of it, I do have actual proof. There is proof, all sorts of things about in economics and, you know, read stuff.
Yes.
But every year I have a group of American students, university students, twice a year, beginning and end of each year, and I've had them for about well over a decade now, about 13, 14 years. And you wouldn't believe it. I never thought I'd see the day when, compared to when it first started off till now, in the last couple of years, these students, I couldn't believe it, American students are very doubtful about democracy. They can't stand capitalism, can you imagine? American students, and they come from, they're not poor students, you know, they come from
wealthy families.
Well, they went through that huge, with that GFC,
they
lost houses, and a lot of people, were forced out.
That's right, their middle class is getting squeezed, there's less of them, and more of them falling into poverty, see, so, but I couldn't believe it, these are young Americans, they're very suspicious now of democracy, can you imagine, and they can't stand capitalism. There's got to be a better way. There's got to be a better system. And I thought, gee, am I hearing things? You know. So, in different ways, to different degrees, it's major change is happening in the world.
Yeah.
The world that the West wants to run and continue running. You know.
It's anyway. It's very it's interesting. You raise some of the issues with sort of Western ways of thinking and being, and because we still have a lot of issues within our community that we it's like you're saying, at times we take on the worst of these different values and
but people have been forced in that position.
Yes,
people have been forced in that position because our culture in Western society is devalued to the extent it is, and by devaluing it, they're trying to replace it with Western education and Western concepts. And it's very difficult when you look at the Aboriginal population. We've had a large stolen generation population, and so there's a lot of confusion that happens within our communities because of all these things that have been done to us.
Yes.
And the circumstances we find ourselves in.
Yes, absolutely.
Aunties, we are running out of time, but I think that's a perfect sort of segue into our next episode. We'd love to have you back, and we can talk about, where our communities are now, and moving forward, and where we aspire to be, moving forward, and the sort of place we would like to leave for our young people and future generations.
Yeah. Good,
aunties, thank yous again.
Thank you.
No worries. We'll catch yous next time on Let's Talk.
You've been tuned to Let's Talk, highlighting the injustice from community to country, suburb to city, with a multitude of hosts, Bo Spearham, Carver Watson, the aunties Lilla Watson and Mary Graham, and Chelsea Bond. Weekday mornings from 9 till 10, it's Let's Talk, welcoming the continued sovereignty of all First Nations peoples right across the country.